Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamma. Today is Wednesday, March 18th, 2015. And with me today, I have my party crew, Dave Hamilton. How are you?
Partying it up.
Awesome. That's exactly as it should be.
It's the day after St. Patrick's Day, and I live an hour from Boston. So admittedly, today is not going to be as much of a party day as yesterday. That's just how it goes.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, do we need to whisper?
Oh, no, no, no. I had all kinds of theater rehearsals and everything yesterday, so I did not party at all. Although I had a Guinness when I got home from all of my events so that I could appropriately celebrate.
Excellent. Excellent. And that other voice you heard, Kelly Gaumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm well. And we have a big deal here in Portland, too, but I managed to dodge the worst of it. So I did have a nice whiskey last evening in celebration and watched The Leprechaun Brothers. There's some homework for the rest of you. I know it's a daily, but go to YouTube and type in The Leprechaun Brothers and watch the resulting video. It's completely family friendly. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not weird. It's not creepy. It's not gross. It's just funny. Enjoy.
All right. And thank you for giving that the disclaimer because the history.
Because we know you.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor this week, lynda.com. And I think that's pretty awesome because they have some really cool training online. So anyhow, awesome. lynda.com. Before we talk about Lynda, though, I wanted to take a look at a little bit about what's going on in the whole Apple streaming TV network world. And so word has come out that as part of the negotiations that Apple has with the various networks that it's hoping to get content from, the company has said that it is willing to share at least some of our data with those networks. And I find that interesting on one level because Apple has a long history of being a company that really talks about how they are protecting our data and keeping our personal information private, and they're not sharing it with other companies. And so this would seem to be at odds with that. Go ahead, Dave.
No, well, is it at odds? I mean, it's definitely at odds with the public message that Apple currently sends about everything, right? You know, we're not in the business of selling you our customer. We are in the business of selling you our customer our products, right? You know, and that's a huge thing, right? Google is definitely in the selling the customer as the business. And they're doing quite well at it. So, you know, if you were a stockholder of Google, you couldn't necessarily fault them for that. But Apple's whole model is different. But is it? I mean, how much of the? Well, no, no, no. Here's my question: on the Apple TV, does HBO and Comcast? Because I have to sign in through Comcast to see HBO currently on the Apple TV. Do they get to know what I watch? I think they do, because when I launch the HBO app, it shows my viewing history.
Now, I wonder if they get to know it was watched and not that it was you who watched it. Because the thing that sticks in my mind when I heard about this and you know, selling data and on is that Apple doesn't even give customer data to its own developers, to people who develop and put something in the App Store. If I go decide to build the Mac Observer magazine and I'm selling it in the App Store and a million people subscribe, I don't know who any of those people are. I have zero access to that information.
Well, you're right. By default, you have zero access. But if you are, and I'm going to use HBO as an example, they do have an app. It is free, but it is in the App Store. And when you launch it, the first thing you have to do is tell them who you are,
right?
So that they can then authenticate you and say, yes, you have permission to watch HBO based on you know, your cable company. So at that point, yes, they do know exactly who I am. And I think on the Apple TV, it's the same thing. So,
well, what I want to know, though, is where that information goes. When I log in, who am I telling? Am I telling Comcast that it's okay? Or am I telling? And here's the reason that I'm curious, because if I'm just telling Apple may just be anonymizing that data and saying, here's how many million people are rewatching the last season of Game of Thrones because the new one starts in April. And it may also be that I would think that it's only Apple that's getting that information and maybe not doing a whole heck of a lot with it, because if it was Comcast, I imagine people who are liberal with their login and password information so that others can use that kind of service who maybe wouldn't have access otherwise would all get shut down. Like, you can't be logged on in Oregon and Washington at the same time. Knock it off.
No, I have the answers to that. Apple doesn't get any of that information. The information is communicated directly to HBO, and it uses Comcast or whatever your cable company's authentication database is. And yes, some of those apps, I don't know if HBO is one of them because I haven't pushed it, but some of those apps have a per user limit. Like, for example, the Comcast Xfinity app, right? There's a fixed mm-hmm. number of users that you can have access to it. But again, that's Comcast's app you downloaded it via the App Store. Apple knows that you downloaded it. But mm-hmm. at that point, Apple doesn't get any of the data. It's all going directly to Comcast. Just like if you download the Mac Geek Gab app and log into your premium account there, that login happens directly with us. There is no via Apple mm-hmm. at all. So
well, that's why my question about
distinction, right?
And that was my question about HBO is because until HBO now, it's not a closed system. It's not me talking straight to HBO. Right now, I have to go through Comcast to verify that I have permission to log into HBO. So that gray area is the part that I'm curious about. And the reason I'm curious about it is because back in the day before HBO listened to Kelly and released HBO Now as a service, we like to call those the olden days before I got to be the boss of them, because I have no illusions about my reach at all. People would say, Kelly, that cannot happen. There's no way you're ever going to be able to pay HBO directly, because that base of cable subscribers who are paying all that premium and paying all those premium rates are how HBO is financing Game of Thrones. So if you want this so that you can pay HBO directly for Game of Thrones, that's lovely, but it's never going to happen because they're not going to get enough people to do it. And now they're doing it.
So we'll see if they get enough people to do it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they're not changing their model. They're expanding it. Right.
Right.
So they're still going to get all the revenue that they would get from cable subscriptions. Now, some people may take a look at their cable bill and decide whether or not it's worth it to cancel the HBO portion and pay HBO directly. We looked very quickly and it's not, right?
Well,
it's way cheaper. Yeah.
Well, yeah, for a lot of people, it's way cheaper. But part of the reason it can be way cheaper to just pay for it on part of your cable bill is if you are happy with the package that you have.
Correct.
Like, for some people, you have to upgrade the package that you have in order to be eligible to pay more for HBO.
That's absolutely true.
So if you are one of those people, that $15 straight to HBO may be better for you than having to upgrade the cable package for another $30 a month and then get into it to HBO for another $10 or whatever.
But I think, you know, I think we lose sight of the fact that all of these things on the Apple TV, all the quote unquote channels that we have on the Apple TV are really just third party or apps. I don't want to say they're third party apps, though some of them are. Mm-hmm. But they're apps, right? And those apps can communicate however they need to. So our Apple TVs have been sending data to Amazon Prime to, you know, I mean, when I watch, well, not Amazon Prime, sorry.
I was going to say.
We need to do that show.
But to Hulu,
hear.
Right? I mean, when I watch a Hulu Plus video on my Apple TV, it is marked as watched in my account. That answers the question. Apple has been allowing user viewership data specifically with the user ID intact to transmit to anyone. So the fact that
Netflix is another prime example.
Correct. Yeah, Netflix is a prime example. Exactly. Yeah, and that's what I was thinking of as a prime example. I just used Amazon instead of Netflix.
I can watch
half a season of Bates Motel on the Apple TV, and then later when I go pick it up on my iPad, it's like, you've watched half a season. Do you want to pick up where you left off? And this is something that has happened already.
It's already happening. So I'm not freaked out about this. Maybe we should be in a big general sense, but like you said, as long as this data is used in a way that actually also benefits me as the customer. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I'm the only one that benefits from Netflix knowing what I've watched on my Apple TV, but I do benefit from that because, like you said, I get to pick up where I left off and watch the next episode. So, you know, that's okay by me. And I don't have a problem with it.
That seems like a reasonable thing. I think the big thing that people are generally kind of flipping out over with this whole Apple streaming TV thing and information being shared is that the information – no. I need to figure out a better way to say that. I believe people are worried that the information Apple is going to be willing to share goes beyond the types of data that is currently shared and goes into very personal information. Now, we have nothing to indicate that's what's happening. And after our conversation so far today, I'm thinking the types of data that are already being shared is what will be shared here too, and it will be no different from what we are already experiencing with Apple TV channels.
This is my hope, and because it is already happening, and so far, at least to my knowledge, nothing bad for me has come out of this. And you know, as far as Netflix goes, like my viewership is kind of all over the map. So it's not like I'm contributing in any useful way to demographic data in the first place. But
no, you're just a case study.
There you go. And then there's the edge case. So I think, at least for me, I am perceiving this right now as nobody knows exactly what the sharing looks like or what extent the sharing will reach. And so people are all getting out their mats and jumping to conclusions. And now, you know, here we are. So until there's more transparency, I'm basically going to reserve my concern about this because I know it's already happening and it's not happening to my detriment.
Right. Okay. And just so you guys know, based on our conversation today.
More.
Yeah. It's like you're giving me foreshadowing. You guys changed my perspective on Apple sharing information on the show today.
Good.
It's not often that my perspective gets changed. Not that I'm stubborn, but it's just not often my perspective gets changed in a big way. And you guys just did that. So that was really cool. All right. So another thing on perspective, you can always have a better perspective on life if you are educated and you know more. And lynda.com can help with that. So they're, as I mentioned earlier, they are our sponsor this week. And their website is lynda.com, lynda.com. And they have a special URL you can go to where you can get 10 free days of their service. So that's lynda.com/TDO. Now, the reason I'm so excited that Lynda is our sponsor this week is because they have a library of over 3,000 training videos on all different kinds of topics. So you can go in and empower yourself by learning more or learning a new topic. And it's amazing what they have. All the instructors are top people in their fields. And what I've been doing just recently is using it as an inspiration tool. And so what I've been doing is looking at videos from a friend of mine, Bert Monroy, who is a Photoshop and Illustrator expert. And what he does is he makes photorealistic images where there's actually no photographic stuff used at all. It's all done in the applications from scratch. And when you look at the things that he does, I mean, it's simply amazing. And watching his techniques is inspiring. And so I'm learning so much about how I can use the tools that I already have by watching how Bert uses the tools in a completely different way. So it's totally awesome. And I think everyone should have the opportunity to empower themselves and inspire themselves in different ways. So please go take advantage of this 10-day free trial and learn as much as you can. And just go take advantage of this, please. It's totally awesome. And you can do that at lynda.com. That's lynda.com/TDO. And I'm really excited that they are our sponsors this week. So thank you, Lynda, for being here with us. All right.
Hey.
Yeah. So now the other thing I wanted to take a look at before we wrap up today mm-hmm. is a thing that you did, Kelly, yesterday, where you you offered up some tips on how to more effectively use the Finder toolbar. And I thought we could take a look at some of what you talked about there and offer up some tips here on the show for people.
Awesome. So it was sort of a two-parter. And the one that went up yesterday was about how to customize the toolbar up at the top. So you know how, like, when you open a Finder window, there's, like, some buttons. There's, like, a left arrow and a right arrow over on the one side, and there's search on the other. And then there's a bunch of buttons in the middle, and you're not quite sure what to do with them, so you kind of filter them out mentally and, like, you kind of forget they're there. You can change those. First of all, it's nice to find out what's there now. And also, you can change them. So all you have to do is open a Finder window, any of them, because this will be the same across all your Finder windows. Open a Finder window, go to the View menu, and choose Customize Toolbar. And then it will slide down a sheet in front of your Finder window and give you a bunch of options for things that you can put up in the toolbar instead. And also the handy thing about using the Customize window is you can add text to them. So if you like what's there, or once you've adjusted it and you want to make sure that you know what they are, you can turn on text underneath them so that you know what the button actually does. And you can also adjust them. You can move them around and space them out and take a bunch out if you want to. And it's super, super handy. And one of the things that is in the default of this is the views for the view for how to view your Finder window, how it's actually laid out. So you can use column. There's four views. There's list view. There's column view. There's icon view. And then there's cover flow, which is sort of funny that it's still there since they managed to obliterate it from iTunes starting with version 11. But for some things, you want one of those views because it's faster to get to your information than some of the others. So it's nice to be able to play with those right there from the Finder toolbar. And there's some really handy stuff up there. There's a gear, and the gear gives you a right-click option, which is very handy. And if you're trying to get into using tags on your files, there's a tag button that shows up as a default in Yosemite. And you can do a lot of stuff up there to help sort of make that worth your while. So
now I love that that other developers can create buttons that go in that toolbar as well.
Yes, Dropbox has one.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. And I love that I can have my Dropbox contextual menu. I also use a transporter. And so I have that there too. So I can get at all the Dropbox and transporter features right from the menu bar.
Yeah, and it's super handy. And one of the nice things that has showed up, I don't know if this is an option in Mavericks, but it's one of the default buttons in Yosemite, and that is the share button. And so if you've got something in particular selected, when you tap on it, you can get mail or messages. By default, you get mail, messages, and AirDrop. And then you have other options in there that you can turn on and off depending on what you want to share. So if you take a lot of pictures and you want to share those pictures to Facebook really commonly, you can check the box. There's a bunch of other things that you can do in order to add them to the menu. And I think it's really handy that for people who need to share stuff out of their computer to other places very often, that's a really nice thing to have up there.
That's really cool.
Dave, do you customize those at all?
You know, I haven't, but now that you've got me thinking about it, I'm going to. Yeah. Yeah. It you know, there's so much in OS X that and this happens on Mac Geek Gab all the time. We'll start talking about something and accidentally we'll teach people something because it's something that one of us has customized, you know, years ago and couldn't possibly live without that mm-hmm. little tweak. But you forget that you've done it because it's just something that's everywhere. And this is one of those things that I don't think about a lot. In fact, I knew that even the view options were up there by default. But if I'm going to change the view, I do it in the menu because that's where I got used to doing it, right? And so now I got to retrain myself. This is good.
You need to retrain yourself to use the keyboard commands for the different views because command 1, command 2, command 3, and command 4 will flip you between them willy-nilly.
Oh, yeah. That's totally what I need to do. Yeah,
and that's
right.
That's an awesome little tip.
This is this is how I live. And the reason I will tell you, this is how I became a super hard, I'm not like a hardcore keyboard commander, but as a person who does it a whole lot more than a lot of people do, it's because the first computer that was my own that I didn't have to share with anybody that I spent a significant amount of time on was the PowerBook 1400C. And it was a gorgeous machine, but I have teeny tiny girl hands, and getting to the trackpad was like an expedition from the keyboard for me. So I started learning the keyboard commands so I wouldn't have to do it as much. And
well,
so I learned all this stuff.
The keyboards,
mm-hmm.
You are giving up efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So keyboard shortcuts are awesome. It doesn't matter if it's in the Finder or in any other application. The more you can do without having to touch your mouse, trackpad, or whatever pointing device you use, the mm-hmm. more efficient you can be.
This is why decades ago I taught myself to use the mouse with my left hand, because I realized I could type faster and better one-handed with my right hand than my left hand. And it was at a time when I was doing a lot of page layout work. Mm-hmm. And what I saw myself doing all day was bouncing my right hand between the keyboard and the mouse. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, and I would bounce it back and do some like one-handed thing with my right hand to, you know, open a window or select something or whatever I needed to do. And I thought, wait a minute, if I just teach myself how to use the mouse with my left hand, I can just leave one hand on the keyboard and one hand on the mouse and I'm golden. And it took about a day to, you know, I played Shuffle Puck Cafe. This was how long ago this was.
Wow.
But that's how I trained myself to use the mouse with the left hand and really just kind of, you know, gain some dexterity with it. And it works great.
That's awesome.
See, yeah. Jeff may be with me on this. The right-handed mouse thing is like one of the few things in the world that is totally accepted and yet an advantage if you're a left-handed person. And you know why? Because I can mouse stuff and I can write it down at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I never understood why the world went with the right-handed mouse, because I'm like, wait, this is awesome for me. How is it for everybody else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yep, totally does.
So anyway, I learned some keyboard commands out of necessity. So there you go, Dave. Command 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll flip you through them, although I don't think you really need 4 because it's cover flow.
Yeah, I might even turn that one off.
Yeah, but 1, 2, 3, those are awesome. And there's a lot of – anyway, so there's other things. Like if you're still somebody who deals with a lot of media, you plug stuff in or remove stuff from your computer on a regular basis, or you burn a lot of disks, there's a burn button you can put in the toolbar. There's an eject button, and if you connect to things remotely, you can hit the – you can put a connect button up there. I did that in mine, and I like it very much. So check those out, because it's actually really interesting if you can kind of force yourself into a new habit like Dave did with switching hands on the mouse. I don't think you'll be sorry.
Awesome. All right. So we are out of time. Dave, Kelly, thank you both of you for being here today. It's always awesome when I get together with you guys. And thank you to lynda.com for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, lynda.com/TDO, and get your 10-day free trial so that you can learn as much as you can possibly pack in your head in a little over a week. And thank you, Lynda, for being our sponsor this week. And listeners, if you have any productivity enhancement tips for using your Mac or the Finder, let us know, because it's always cool to learn new things. So you can track us down in the comments in the show notes, and you can also find us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is TMO Daily. And thank you for being here. We will see everyone again tomorrow.